So giving some context to start us off with, it's hard to know exactly how much paternity leave is being taken in the United States, but there is a study put out in 2012 by the Families and Work Institute shows that just 14% of employers offer any kind of paid leave for the spouses of women who have given birth. So that was kind of where we stood as a country in 2012. So what do we think about paternity leave and its impacts on women's economic security?
I think it's a really integral part. You know, I think there are two pieces of it. One, there's not enough paid maternity leave, period. Mm-hmm. And I think we need paternity leave that allows women to make the choice to go back to work should they decide to, without having that choice mean that they have to turn over the care of their child to somebody outside of their family. I mean, having just gone through this transition, if I were coming back to work knowing that my partner, male or female, were able to be at home with my child for a little while longer, I think it would make a big difference in how I felt making those first steps and the choices that I made about when I could come back, when I chose to come back, etc.
Yeah, so for one of the examples I was going to bring up is Sweden, which has one of the best parental leave. And so they allocate a total of 480 days per child, which can take any time until the child is 8 years old. And then you can share those days, although 60 are allocated specifically to the father, and they're entitled to receive 80% of their wages, although it's capped at a certain level.
I guess this applies more to maternity leave than to paternity leave, or I am not sure, but if you have that benefit, there's much less turnover, and that's very beneficial for the employer also. So it's a win-win for the employee and the employer.
On a slightly different note, I think from a socialization perspective and speaking to sort of Anne Rae Slaughter's conversation about breadwinning and caretaking, I think we set up these standards of roles and expectations from the beginning when we don't allow fathers to take leave. It really does house squarely the burden of caregiving on the mother, and that gets perpetuated throughout her career. And so, you know, when Jennifer, you talked, and I think Nikki's talked, and other people who've talked about, you know, what has allowed them to move up a career ladder has been that kind of give and take where their partners have been able to step in to that caretaking fold and have allowed them to step out to be able to direct more of their time and attention to their careers at different points in time. And it's not set up to facilitate that from the beginning when we're saying that it's not okay and we don't create an infrastructure that allows fathers to step into that space from the beginning, because it means that you're sort of swimming against the current, if you will, in order to create those spaces that further down the line allow you to have a more equitable caretaking, breadwinning relationship.
Well, we talk about gender roles being, you know, so often we talk about gender roles being restrictive for women, but we also know they're very restrictive for men, and sort of the spectrum of their lives that they can engage in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of these places where we do create it's a real disservice to fathers to not be able to kind of have the space and opportunity to kind of engage in their kids' lives in that way. And it is limiting.
Yeah.
There was a great, did anyone see the piece that Secretary of Labor Tom Perez wrote in mm-hmm. Huffington Post?
It was good.
It was really good.
Yeah.
It was really good, and it was so nice. So he wrote a piece about just how he and his career has had flexibility. So he comes home at night, he's coached his kids' teams. And so he talks about his personal experience of being a very involved father, and that he feels he's had a great deal of flexibility that has allowed him to do that, but that our policies as a country mm-hmm. don't allow for that to happen across the board. It was just, it was a great mm-hmm. piece, and to have the Secretary of Labor put that out there, to me, just spoke volumes of kind of how far we have come in
yeah.
some ways.
It was yeah. a very approachable article.
Yeah.
I think it's also interesting the way we are so focused on symptom change instead of systems change, in terms of thinking about what would it mean for a number of different things if we had parents who were able to be more engaged with their kids along the way? And what would it mean for kind of the interventions that we would have to spend money on? What would it mean for dropout rates, for prison rates, all of those different things? And we don't invest on the front end in a way, as a way of kind of creating infrastructure that will support healthier children's growth and development that will avoid some of these things on the back end. And I see paternity leave as one of those things that, again, allows potentially the opportunity for that kind of engagement. But just overarchingly, we don't invest in all of those critical phases of our kids' development.
You know, that's a bit, because that's something I've been thinking about a lot with a middle schooler and a high schooler. Because their lives don't end at 3 months or 6 months.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was coming back to work after having Katya, my boss at the time said to me, I know this is really hard. Like, this is a hard decision right now. You're like, oh my God, I'm leaving this baby. But she said, you are going to need to be there for her more so when she's in middle school than you do now. And now that I'm there, I realize she's 100% right. But so we don't think about it as a continuum, and we don't think about the other points in time. You know, they're in your house until they're 18 before they go to school, but you never stop parenting them. And so there are moments along the way where more time at home is better and needed, but if that's not a part of the conversation at all.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking, that I think that the parental leave is one thing, the flexibility of working and being able to is even maybe in the long run more important because it's for a longer period of time. And you don't really always know when it is your child is going to need your intervention. And, you know, 480 days for the first 8 years is great, but what happens if your kid has something that happens to them at 10 or at where you really need the time and you no longer have the guaranteed income, you no longer have the flexibility in your work schedule. And, you know, I don't know the answer, but I do worry about that.
But even 480 days for the first 8 years is way more than what we're talking about.
Oh, it's, you know, it's night and day.
Yes.
I mean,
Well, and not only that, but I think, you know, as you see people starting to value parental leave in the early years, then you'll start seeing some of this flexible schedule stuff come up because people are more involved with their kids' lives. People are more involved. The culture around being a family man or woman is more acceptable, and the flexibility in schedules is something that I think would come with that.
I think there's also a fundamental philosophical issue that we have in terms of how we prioritize work and family from the perspective. It feels like you work and that's kind of your thing, and then your family is the thing that you have on the side, as opposed like to your family being the thing and the work is what you do to be able to sustain and support that. And, you know, it really is on its head in that we have kind of our work schedules in many ways and are trying to sort of figure out how to manage some of the familial stuff in and around that, as opposed to the other way around. And I don't know if that's a product of a capitalist society. I don't know how that compares to kind of other economic models and if it's the same, it's the same type of thing. But
I think it may also be in some ways a result of having families later. So you have already started a career before you have your family. So how you define yourself, you're starting out defining yourself by your work and what you're doing on a daily basis, and the family is interlaid into that rather than the other way around.
I thought it was really interesting that she said, which I kind of didn't agree with her, about re-socializing men to change the way that they're valuing themselves. And maybe this is a product of, like, I am of a younger generation, like, I am... My peers are like Jean, where they kind of don't see a very clear cut, I'm going to be a breadwinner or a caregiver kind of dichotomy. I don't feel like re-socializing men is the right case to make. I think it's more, we're in this situation that we're in now because, like you said, women are waiting until longer into their careers to start families. There are other family situations, so there are second marriages with a whole other set of kids, or people aren't getting married. There were, in all of these other non-traditional kinds of living arrangements, that there's sort of a tide swell, that there's so many of us thinking about it differently.
Yeah.
I don't feel like targeting the resocialization of men is the right angle to take on it.
So I think that's interesting, because I think there is a whole generation of men who think about this very, very differently. So, but they're still working with men that are of a different generation that don't think about the same way. So I don't know that it's resocializing, but I think there's an education piece. I mean, even when Gene took his leave, I mean, they didn't give him a hard time, but there were some guys that were like, really, you're going to be home for a month with this baby? Like, what are you going to do? They kind of gave him a hard time about it, but he took the leave.
Well, and it certainly is class-oriented. So for my husband, who's always been a carpenter, cabinet maker, so he's in a blue-collar kind of situation, when he was working in the cabinet shop, there was a time when they were told that they could not get personal phone calls during the day. Well, especially the younger guys in his office said, you've got to be kidding. He said, I'm the one who's on call for the daycare center.
Yeah.
My wife is traveling. If I need to get personal calls, you can't say that we can't get them. But that was the rule. You couldn't get a personal call at work. And they had to sort of educate people about, well, you got to let us do this.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that there is a class piece of it as well. And generational, because it was the younger guys who said, no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also thought it was interesting when I was looking at some studies for this that in Germany, whenever they decided in 2007 to make the switch to giving, reserving 2 of 14 months for fathers instead of the mothers, that within just 2 years, fathers taking parental leave surged from 3% to more than 20%. So I feel like using Germany maybe as a little case study there to see this idea that if it's available and if it's sort of like a use it or lose it. So those 60 days, the 60 days in Sweden, for example, if the father doesn't take it, the mother doesn't get it. It's just, that is for the father.
You
use
cut
it,
the 480 down to 420.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that idea of like, this is for both parents to be engaged. And if that opportunity was available, it seems, you know, that maybe people would be taking advantage of it at higher levels.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if in other countries like Sweden and the Nordic countries that are so progressive on these issues, that is their cultural and their benefits, period. I mean, vacation, you know, you have the summer, you know, it's not 2 weeks. So I wonder if just culturally it's a very different norm, because the benefits writ large are so different.
Yeah, and my guess is it would just take a while, because as it becomes a norm, it's a norm.
And I did also want to, there were a couple of things I thought were interesting as we kind of wrap up, but just thinking about the economic security aspects of this for women and talking about parental leave, I thought it was interesting that, keep coming back to Sweden, but they've been doing this for, I think, 40-something years at this point. So, it showed that, for instance, a mother's future earnings increased on average 7% for every month that the father took leave.
Wow.
So to imagine that just having parental leave allowed a woman's potential future earnings to increase by 7% for every month, I thought was astounding.
So the answer to if you're out of the workforce, what happens to your career track is kind of answered there.
Well, and I thought another really interesting thing is we are seeing trends now that women are increasingly becoming the breadwinners of their family. So if we are still having this mentality that only women can take time off for maternity leave, we're losing breadwinners, we're losing future earning potential. There's so much that is coming from that. And then, you know, one other thing I thought was interesting is that divorce rates went down when parental leave was allowed, and that a lot more of the family...
I was interested in children's health, whether they saw an increase in children's health overall because they had this kind of investment early on. Yeah.
So they said not only did divorce rates go down, but they also saw increased shared custody of children if there was a divorce. You see a reduction in infant mortality rates correlated with parental leave mandates in countries. So there's certainly a lot of, exactly what you're saying, economic benefits, children's health benefits. Well, thank you guys for taking some time, and I really hope that people who read or listen to this will also pitch in with their questions and their comments, and that we can take this discussion even further and talk about it. So we will leave it at that.